In 1223, the Mongols killed 50,000 soldiers of the Kievan Rus at the Battle of the Kalka River. The Russians had been pursuing the retreating Mongol army following their rout of the Mongol rearguard. Eager for further victory, the Rus prince, Mstislav the Bold, boldly sent his army across the Kalka River, where they were quickly surrounded and destroyed. Mstislav managed to retreat with a small portion of his army to a nearby fort, which was surrounded 3 days later by the Mongols, who promised Mstislav and his men safe passage if they surrendered. They surrendered and were summarily slaughtered. The Rus soldiers had been deceived. The Mongols had feigned a retreat and used the apparently weak rearguard as bait to encourage the Russian pursuit. The feigned retreat was a favourite tactic of the Mongols during their conquest of mainland Asia. After a brief exchange of hostilities, the Mongols would retreat, and the enemy, excited by their apparent victory, would pursue them. The Mongols would often leave behind wagons of loot and alcohol, and strew enticing trinkets along their route of retreat to encourage the eager enemy to give chase. And when the enemy was strung out, disorganized, tired, and often drunk, the Mongols would reorganize, surround, and annihilate them. A feigned retreat followed by a massive, well-planned counterattack. Warner Bros., in an admittedly brilliant move, adopted this same strategy in the marketing of Barbie. With the power of Disney in a state of collapse, a flopbuster summer of wretched and well-deserved commercial failures, the overpowered Mary Sue-infested superhero genre in a death spiral, and audiences turning away from franchises they know have been ideologically captured, it seems that we are in a turning point on the cinematic front of the culture war. Put simply, from the perspective of Joe Popcorn, woke is losing. With their marketing campaign for Barbie, Warner Bros. Have played into that perception, releasing trailers that make the movie look like a fun, harmless romp for the whole family. A good old-fashioned good time with no nasty politics, no agendas, no screeching screeds, just big pink mansions, glamorous characters, cheesy fun, silly costumes, and chiseled Ryan Goslings. Warner Bros. Have learned from the mistakes of other failed productions. Instead of sending their actors out with instructions to spew a barely coherent torrent of verbal diarrhea and seething fan hatred,
this represents progression. This represents an acknowledgement of where we have been and a will to get to where we need to be in order for this to be accessible to everyone.
The Star Wars fan base really seems to be the most kind of toxic at the moment.
Warner Bros. Clearly gave everyone involved in the promotion of the Barbie movie strict orders to keep their mouths shut about the political content of the movie and instead entice the audience in with shiny pink trinkets. Only when the enemy was captured in the theater and unable to retreat would Warner Bros. Unleash their attack. Barbie, a two-hour-long feminist diatribe disguised as a movie. The levels of political extremism on display in Barbie make She-Hulk look like a university pamphlet on male pregnancy. If She-Hulk is a struggle session in which a man is forced to apologize for his existence before being allowed to return to a cowed and closely monitored existence, Barbie is a feminist gulag system in which every trace of a prisoner's masculinity is to be utterly and irrevocably eradicated before he is allowed to return to the matriarchal society under the condition that he undergo a program of chemical castration. Every scene in Barbie, every line, every character interaction, the plot, the story, the casting, everything, absolutely everything in this movie is there to serve a political purpose. Everything in the movie exists as a tool with which to push feminist narrative. If Ken is doing pull-ups, it's because pull-ups are toxic masculinity. If Ken has a nice Hummer, it's because toxic masculinity. If we see a group of construction workers, it's so they can wolf whistle at Barbie and show how sexist construction workers are and how sexual casual objectification of women permeates every facet of the patriarchal hellscape. If a teenager shows up, it's so she can regurgitate the sixth form feminist shite her poor wee head has been filled with in school. I don't want this video to just be a reactionary political rant, so here is my summary assessment of Barbie without consideration of its political messages. Barbie is a very bad movie. The main villain is the patriarchy, but there is never a sense that it presents any real threat, either in the form of the Mattel board or Alphakin. Will Ferrell gave a low-effort, bland performance. Parts of the movie are rushed and other parts are too long. Barbie and Ken are two-dimensional characters, but every other character isn't even two-dimensional. They're one-dimensional. Will Ferrell, Asian Ken and all the other Kens, and every single man Barbie meets in the real world are one-dimensional cardboard cutout caricatures. Teenage Communist and Boss Mom are the worst characters in the movie, by far. Both exist simply to scream blunt force feminist rants into the face of the viewer and do not serve the plot in any meaningful way. Neither are even remotely endearing, and Teenage Communist in particular is supremely unlikable. There is no explanation for why Boss Mom or Teenage Communist goes back to Barbie Land with Barbie. The premise of Barbies being affected by the real world play of their owners makes no sense, as this would entail them all dying when the doll they are linked to inevitably ends up getting crushed in a landfill. Some of the music is terrible. The old lady character doesn't work, she just creates cast bloat. She was intended as an emotional centerpiece, but turns out as the boring old lady who shows up uninvited and badly compromises the end of the movie. Much more on that later. The Mattel board don't do anything other than chase Barbie in one scene and then show up at the end to act as a conduit to the final scene. They add nothing to the movie and shouldn't have been in it. The Barbies are portrayed as heroes but are actually the villains. Ken is portrayed as a villain but is actually the hero. The director contradicts her own political and moral messaging dozens of times. Almost none of the jokes land. The writing is very bad. The director, Greta Gerwig, does not know how to insert messages into a movie. Her idea of messaging is to literally just have her characters scream them at the audience. Gerwig also makes extensive attempts at incorporating elements of symbolism, analogy, and metaphor, all of which fail. The ending makes no sense. Why do the Kens just agree to return to servitude because the Barbies got together and passed some legislation? They're supposed to be the patriarchy. So patriarch, get those wenches back into the kitchen where they belong. Barbie is a voyage and return story, which is the Alice in Wonderland plot template, which usually has five stages: anticipation, dream, frustration, nightmare, thrilling escape, and return. The dream stage of the plot in particular is handled clumsily. It's brought to an end way too quickly because Gerwig was impatient for the movie to get to the all men bad message, and the thrilling escape was pathetic. The Mattel board make for a weak villain. They're too slapstick, harmless, and caricaturish to be a genuinely threatening presence in the movie. There are also character contradictions. Ken assumes that a female doctor is a nurse because sexism, but that makes no sense since Ken has only ever existed in a matriarchy where the only doctors are women. Why then would he think that a woman can't be a doctor? The scene near the end with Barbie and the old lady is so boring that I couldn't even pay attention to what they were saying. Anytime Teenage Communist or Boss Mom speak more than three words, they end up spewing out boring platitudes that are next to impossible to pay attention to. Teenage Communist's character motivation changes constantly depending on what the script needs her to do. The Barbie movie is a total mess. I will say though, Barbie is not the worst movie of the year. Just as The Despot is capable of respecting our enemies at Warner Brothers for their strategic masterstroke that was their Find Retreat marketing campaign for Barbie, I am also capable of appreciating the positive aspects of a movie I despise. Just last night I was watching Terminator Genisys, a truly awful movie that makes so little sense that it would be redundant to say it has plot holes. The entire movie is just one gigantic plot hole with Terminators. But Arnold Schwarzenegger was very funny in it. He plays an endearing, deadpan version of the Terminator that is very easy to take for granted. And this version of the Terminator is a successful iteration of a Terminator built upon the franchise's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep theme. And the movie is a stellar example of an entertaining train wreck.
Out.
But make no mistake, Terminator Genisys is awful. Like, it is shocking. John Connor being turned into a Terminator? What were the people who wrote this shite smoking?
The human subjects went insane.
The only way this movie could be worse is if they had young John Connor murdered in front of the audience. Good thing that never happened. As much as I hate Barbie, fundamentally this movie exists to push a political doctrine that is destructive, divisive by design, corporate, hateful, and misery-inducing. I can admit that the movie does have a few redeeming aspects. Margot Robbie is good as Barbie and Ryan Gosling is excellent as Ken. He clearly worked his ass off to get himself in great shape to play Ken. He's charismatic and, at times, funny in spite of the script. He elevates a hammy role and carries the entire third act of the movie. This isn't Javier Bardem showing up to a movie he knows is absolute unmitigated wank just to receive a paycheck and putting in a performance that has all the emotion and excitement of a quadriplegic houseplant.
I can't be bargained with. Can't be reasoned with. I don't feel pity or remorse or fear. I absolutely will not stop ever until Skynet rules this world.
Barbie also has a unique visual identity. The art design is outstanding. It's ultra gaudy and grotesque. The mixture of plasticity imitating reality, brutalist unicorn colors, and the embrace of uncanny valley scale makes Barbie Land look simultaneously dreamlike and horrifying. I would contrast this with Pixar's latest well-deserved box office bomb, Elemental, a movie that utterly fails to establish a visual identity because the art design is so bland. There is not a single character design or location in Elemental that isn't immediately forgettable. It is a movie that spinelessly coasts along on visual platitudes because it lacks any real sense of personality, visual or otherwise. Barbie's music ranges from excellent to bad to Nicki Minaj vomiting inane, incoherent garbage over the top of Aqua's Barbie World. The best piece of music appears only briefly, a remix of Richard Strauss's Also Sprach Zarathustra, more commonly known as the 2001 opening music. More on that later. The movie's lead song, which serves as an opening dance number, Dance the Night, performed by Dua Lipa, is a very well put together piece of disposable dance pop. Ironically, for a movie that pushes a female supremacist narrative, this song, which is publicly attributed to a woman, was written by a man, Mark Ronson. There's also a nice Billie Eilish ballad in there. Now for the very bad. Nicki Minaj's contribution sounds like a bag of cats screaming out in agony while being flushed down a toilet. And Sam Smith wrote a song for Barbie. It sounds like this. Batman to the rescue. Barbie, your time is up. The director of Barbie, Greta Gerwig, should have cast the shite that Sam Smith delivered to her for the movie into the gutter where it belongs. Instead, she made the same mistake the Bond producers infamously made when they chose Sam Smith's pathetic attempt at a Bond song over Radiohead's masterpiece Spectre for the title sequence of 2015's Spectre. Smith's song, which does not deserve to be named, has since become widely regarded as the worst Bond song, while Radiohead's opus continues to grow in reputation. The Spectre production not only missed an open net with that, they turned around and booted the ball into their own net from the 90-yard line.
Wow, awful. Absolutely awful.
Now, given just how absurdly political this movie is, I cannot continue this video without getting into the specifics of Barbie's socio-political messaging.
Oh my god, when will you movie YouTubers learn to stay away from politics? Just review the movie and shut up about politics. This was a good video until you said a thing I don't like. I'm out. You lost me when you said, woke. There's no such thing as woke.
I'm afraid that's not possible, non-playable sheep. Reviewing Barbie without addressing its political messages would be like reviewing Triumph of the Will without reference to that movie's political elements. Both are propaganda films, both are designed to elevate a political doctrine. In a movie like The Last Jedi, politics is the elephant in the room. In Barbie, the room has been designed specifically to accommodate the elephant. The movie is its politics. If you were to remove all political elements from Barbie, you would be left with a few minutes of dance choreography followed by the end credits. But fair warning has been given. If you, like non-playable sheep, do not want to hear me dismantle Barbie by addressing its political components, now is the time to leave. Just go watch Chris Stuckman's review of Barbie instead. You'll find it much less challenging.
I am wearing a Jaws shirt.
As mentioned earlier, Barbie is a five-stage voyage and return plot. All five stages are catalyzed by feminist concerns and involve heavy-handed use of straw men and socio-political metaphors. In the anticipation stage, Barbie gets flat feet. How horrifying! Now she won't be able to satisfy sexist male expectations of her person by wearing high heels every minute of the day. And she's been having negative thoughts. How dare she! A woman is expected to maintain a positive demeanor all the time. Do as the patriarchy expect and keep a smile plastered on her face while she does it. This won't do, she'll have to get it fixed. The dream stage lasts literally seconds before the frustration stage begins. Creepy stars, wolf whistles, and sexist comments start pouring in from every corner. I thought it would have been the human shit everywhere in LA, or the open-air homeless camps, or the used needle-strewn streets, or the shoplifting gangs that defined the frustration stage. But no, it's sexist men publicly objectifying women, a problem that has plagued the sexist backwater that is LA for years. This is also the stage in which Simp Ken begins his transformation into Alpha Ken, when he realizes that in the real world, men aren't subservient, they dominate, and they do it by using a system called patriarchy. The thrilling escape is Barbie fleeing from a group of hyper-powerful men trying to force her into a literal box, a metaphor for how men force women into predetermined roles in society from which there is no escape. The nightmare stage is the matriarchy being displaced by Alpha Ken's patriarchy. The return stage is Barbie and her girl boss allies curing the women of the patriarchal brainwashing by reminding them of how amazing they are and always have been, toppling the patriarchy and re-establishing the matriarchy as it should be. The ending is Barbie becoming a real woman by rejecting male expectations of her and, of course, because this is a feminist film, vagina.
Gynecologist.
Everything that happens in this movie, from the very first scene to the last word of dialogue, is politically motivated. That's a lot of politics. Barbie is a two-hour-long avalanche of feminist garbage, a particularly virulent strain of feminism that encourages female supremacy and seething hatred of men, and which is overwhelmingly concerned with the social status and wealth of elite women. Given the sheer volume of political assertions in Barbie, I will not be able to address every single one of them, but I will endeavour to deal with the main messages of the movie. At the start, the girls playing with baby dolls are represented as the unevolved, primitive form of modern woman. Girls playing at being mothers and thus preparing themselves for a life of motherhood are to modern women what the apes at the start of 2001 are to man. So we are only a few seconds in and already we have our first political message. Stay-at-home mothers are social primitives. The girls are clearly not enjoying themselves here. The drudgery of motherhood and homekeeping is emphasized by the dull, drab-colored clothing they are dressed in, their generally miserable expressions, and their anesthetized movements. This contrasts sharply with the aggressive, dynamic movement of the girls when they smash the dolls, as if they have come to life by rejecting motherhood. This is the only time either babies or pre-adolescent children appear in this movie, a scene in which little girls are smashing doll babies against rocks, a subtle hint that only by rejecting motherhood can young girls self-actualize as successful career women, safely ensconced within the warm, comfortable bowels of the corporate machine.
She has her own money, her own house, her own car, her own career.
The framework within which the movie's socio-political worldview will be propagated is here made clear. Wealth, consumerism, careerism, and ultra-successful women at the very top of society matter. Everyone else does not. The paragon of womanhood is the hyper-consumerist career woman.
Women can be anything.
But only girls. The word boys is uttered only once in this movie, in a negative context.
Every night is boys' night.
The idea that girls can be anything is typical of the female supremacist messaging this movie is saturated in. This message will be pushed strongly when the narrative is that women are amazing and can do anything, but will be contradicted when the narrative shifts to women are oppressed and can't do anything because of patriarchy. Obviously, both cannot be true. If girls can achieve anything, then oppressive patriarchy doesn't exist because women have all the same opportunities that men have. This is the first of the many occasions in which Gerwig will utilize doublethink in her political assertions.
All problems of feminism and equal rights have been solved.
Gerwig has been very careful to conflate feminism with equal rights early in the movie. But, as the movie demonstrates, modern feminism is far more interested in power and the elevation of women at the expense of men than it is in equality. The female supremacist matriarchy of Barbieland is portrayed as idyllic and re-established at the movie's happy ending, while the Ken's attempt to achieve political enfranchisement is vilified and crushed. The movie claims that feminism is the pursuit of equality between the sexes, but shows us that it is in fact the quest for power over men. This is one of only two occasions pregnancy will be shown or mentioned in the movie. A literal drive-by glance before the woman in her shameful condition is quickly brushed aside. She will be seen again, but only as a prop for a jump scare joke. Female companionship is shown to be idyllic and peaceful.
Turn it off.
turn to the Barbie next to you. Tell her how much you love her. Compliment her.
How come you're so amazing?
No comment! Ah!
This will soon be contrasted against the testosterone-driven aggression between men. We next see body positive Barbie expressing anti-free speech sentiments that are supposed to make her sound smart. She's arguing the Citizens United case, asserting that private organizations, which she refers to as corporations, do not have the right to free speech. In real-world terms, this would mean that private non-profit organizations would not be able to air criticisms of political candidates they oppose. In the actual case, which went to the Supreme Court in 2008, Citizens United, a conservative non-profit, had been prevented from airing an advertisement for a movie critical of then-candidate Hillary Clinton. Citizens United argued that the law preventing them from airing their ad, the Campaign Reform Act of 2002, was unconstitutional, as it prevented them from exercising their right to free speech guaranteed by the First Amendment. The Supreme Court agreed, and the Campaign Reform Act was struck down as unconstitutional. But in Barbie Land, the Supreme Court does not agree, because in Barbie Land, there is no free speech, presumably in order to ensure that there is no criticism of the matriarchy which disenfranchises all men.
I have no difficulty holding both logic and feeling at the same time.
Logic and feeling are not inherently contradictory. See this clip of a resident of Martha's Vineyard mourning the departure of migrants that arrived there.
This morning, 48 migrants who landed on Martha's Vineyard Wednesday left a church shelter during an emotional send-off from volunteers.
They're in my heart. Forever.
She understands the logic of the situation. If we let these people stay here, they'll trash the place, and once word gets out that we are welcoming to migrants, more and more will arrive. So logically, they must be banished from the area. But she still feels for the plight of these poor people and will hold them in her heart forever. At least until her next cocktail lunch, at which point she will have completely forgotten about them. As is well demonstrated over the runtime of this movie, feeling will dictate the course of logic.
And it does not diminish my powers. It expands them.
Love, believe me, the last thing you want to do is expand. In one of my earlier videos, I discussed the use of the hot by association element in body positive advertising. Here's a quick example of it. In this image, the main body positive asset is placed between the two most stereotypically beautiful and clearly just plain hottest girls in the photo. This is done to create a subliminal association between the genuine beauty of the hot girls and the less appealing appearance of the asset. The Barbie movie uses the same tactic to portray fat Barbie as hot. She is constantly surrounded by beautiful, thin Barbies in an attempt to visually conflate the two.
I feel so beautiful, so do I.
We see some female astronauts doing a spacewalk, because women can be anything. In 2019, NASA was planning a historic first with a powerful, all-female spacewalk, but cancelled it at the last minute. The excuse given was that the spacesuit was too big, and the mission control dog ate the operation protocols. The possibility of an all-female spacewalk has not been raised since.
We fixed everything so that all women in the real world can be happy and powerful.
It is not enough for women to be happy. A woman's true worth comes from her proximity to power. The pursuit of power is what should define womanhood in the worldview of the director. The movie also conflates happiness and power, suggesting a woman can only be happy when she has power. Didn't the pursuit of power used to be a bad thing in movies?
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
The absolute power!
A new power is rising.
There is no good and evil. There is only power.
But this movie will bring up power again and again, as if it is an inherently good thing that women should desire.
And it does not diminish my powers. All women in the real world can be happy and powerful. I'm supposed to help you and make you happy and powerful.
There is only power.
Oh, I am powerful.
Power is not a good thing. Tolkien's One Ring destroys the ring bearer. This is a metaphor for how power utterly corrupts the individual wielding it. There is a reason the US government was set up with checks and balances. The president must run for re-election every 4 years. After FDR, a two-term limit was set. The Supreme Court can strike down any law deemed unconstitutional. The individual has inalienable rights, meaning rights that the state cannot interfere with. All of this was done done out of an understanding that the centralization of power is a bad idea. Unchecked, centralized power, by its nature, always expands and continues to do so until it comes up against a barrier that prevents it from further expansion. The only reason the Ashikaga shogunate didn't conquer Korea and China under its most powerful leader, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, who had centralized power under himself, is because it couldn't. Their forces were defeated by the Chinese army and the Korean navy. Seeking responsibility is a good thing, and power will accrue as a necessary tool with which to undertake your responsibilities dutifully and correctly, but seeking power entirely for its own sake is, quite simply, evil. A woman who wants to be a high-powered lawyer attending power lunches today can very easily become the utterly corrupt politician of tomorrow who no longer has anything even resembling a moral compass left, and yes, the same is absolutely true of men. By the way, I have received literally hundreds of comments pointing out the fact that I pronounce the word power as par, usually in the comments section of my Rings of Power videos. To these comments, I respond, there is no good and evil, only par. As political as the first act of Barbie is, it is the least political part of this movie. When Barbie gets to what this movie calls the real world, the political messaging gets turned up to 11 and put on She-Hulk steroids. The real world in Barbie is, like Barbieland, a weak straw man. It is simply a caricaturish assemblage of anti-male tropes shoehorned into downtown LA. This is not the real world, this is patriarchy land, and it is every bit as fictional as Barbie land. The sexist stirs and wolf whistles start as soon as Barbie arrives in patriarchy land, and the straw manning is lazy, blunt force, and shamelessly low effort.
What's going on? Why are these men looking at me?
Yeah, they're also staring at me.
Men love being looked at, but women hate it. Which is why TikTok thoughts don't show up to the gym in their underwear to get men to stare at them so they can pretend to be upset and post a performative outrage video online for millions of people to watch.
Watch this guy try move to me at the gym. Checks absolutely nothing on his phone.
Looks over at me being busy sorting my wrist straps.
These in straps taking up too much time. Makes a swift return.
Also, looking at women as violence now.
Mine very much has an undertone of violence.
So this.
Oh, hello. You must be Jane's friend. So no.
Is self-defense. We next get the very tired feminist trope of the construction workers aiming lewd comments at a hot girl. Gerwig is determined to portray construction workers in the worst possible light. This is a perfect example of Gerwig's hypocrisy. She claims victimhood status for all women and laments how the patriarchy keeps women down, but she feels perfectly comfortable vilifying broke working stiffs. The average construction worker salary in the United States is $39,000. The average salary across the entire economy is $60,000. Construction workers are poor laborers with no power and no influence. They are close to the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. The patriarchy does not exist, but if it did, construction workers wouldn't be invited. But this $150 million Hollywood movie, directed by a born and bred coastal elitist millionaire, is quite happy to take a big, filthy dump all over the men that literally build the cities she lives in. Because Gerwig couldn't be bothered finding any real examples of everyday sexism, since they are so rare, so she just went with the lazy trope.
Everything's almost like reversed here.
Meaning that the exact same social conditions exist and the only difference is that the sexes are reversed, then why is it okay in Barbie land but not okay in patriarchy land? A nation where one half of humanity runs everything and maintains all power and influence while disregarding the other half of humanity is idyllic, but a nation where one half of humanity runs everything and maintains all power and influence while disregarding the other half of humanity is horrifying.
Double think. The acceptance of or mental capacity to accept contrary opinions or beliefs at the same time, especially as a result of political indoctrination.
Next, a random dude rolls up behind Barbie and gives her a good old patriarchy slap on the ass. This is a total hallucination. If a man did this in LA, he would, if he's lucky, only lose all of his money to the girl in a civil lawsuit. The suit would never get anywhere near a judge. The guy would settle, the girl would get his net worth, and if he's lucky, he will avoid a criminal charge, which would probably involve the imposition of damages to be paid to the woman, which would inevitably lead him to declare bankruptcy. If this went public and his name got out there, he would be fired and it would be basically impossible for him to get a job thereafter. But in patriarchy land,
it's all good, bruh.
In fact, Barbie gets arrested for defending herself and is then fondled and thirsted over by pervy cops. So Ken, for the first time, experiences what it's like to be treated with something resembling an appreciation of his basic humanity. But this is only the beginning of his journey into toxic masculinity. The movie now goes full Kubrickian horror and shows us two gym bros fist bumping. Because gym camaraderie between men, and indeed exercise itself, is toxic. No, seriously, this is now a mainstream left-wing argument. From MSNBC. Karen iPhone.
Physical fitness has always been central to the far right. In Mein Kampf, Hitler fixated on boxing and jiu-jitsu, believing they could help him create an army of millions whose aggressive spirit and impeccably trained bodies, combined with fanatical love of the fatherland, would do more for the German nation than any mediocre tactical weapons training.
Hitler also encouraged people to stop smoking in Mein Kampf, arguing that it was a waste of time and money, and the German government, under his rule, launched the world's first anti-smoking campaign. So quitting smoking is literally Hitler? Hey wait, I quit smoking? And I trained at boxing, so does that like make me, like, super Hitler? The reason feminism is coming for your workout is because gyms are the only space left where men can just be men without being harangued for engaging their naturally masculine drive for strength and accomplishment. Feminism absolutely will not stop ever until every shred of masculinity has been eradicated from Western society. Doing business is also toxic. Making deals is toxic. Preventing a subordinate from involving herself in high-level negotiations she is neither qualified for nor paid to be involved in.
But not now, Margaret.
Is toxic. Male success is toxic. Female success is wonderful, commendable, and necessary.
Money, house, car, career.
But male success is toxic.
Doublethink.
By the way, the remix of Also Sprach Zarathustra in this scene is just fucking awesome. Karen iPhone, hit that shit! George Washington rejected total power in favor of representative government with checks and balances designed to prevent the centralization of power and keep power in the hands of the people.
Toxic.
Abe Lincoln led America through its civil war, reunited the country, crushed the Confederacy, and freed 3.5 million human beings.
Toxic.
Alexander Hamilton contributed to the drafting of the American Constitution, the greatest political document ever written, and the foundation of the most successful nation in history.
Toxic.
Competition is toxic. Sports is toxic. Making money is toxic. Being the best is toxic. Sylvester Stallone is toxic. This is without doubt the best scene in the movie. A man who has only ever known subjugation suddenly realizing his potential. A man who has been told that he will never be anything other than a side piece understands in a moment of glorious epiphany that he can make it. A magnificent compilation of masculine achievement rounded out by Stallone, the living embodiment of the American dream. A man who raised himself from squalor to the heights of wealth and greatness, who wanted success but was willing to fail as long as he failed on his own terms, and Ryan Gosling's reactions are perfect. Great actor, man. Of course, Greta Gerwig intends this scene as a condemnation of masculine achievement. It is meant to have the opposite cognitive effect to what it actually has. The audience is supposed to look at this scene and be horrified at the maleness of success and condemn those involved in it as toxic
men.
Gerwig chooses to show Sylvester Stallone as an exemplar of toxic male success, she disregards him as an individual and portrays him as nothing more than a symbol of what she and her ilk call toxic masculinity. She doesn't want you to see the man, the individual, the human story that is Stallone. She wants you to see only her deconstructionist distortion of him. But the despot does want you to see Stallone and know his story. I would not presume to be able to tell it anywhere near as compellingly as the man himself.
And so I had $106, the rent was $300, I had a pregnant wife. I knew that if I sold it, even for $500,000, I knew that after the money was gone, I would become very bitter for having sold out.
The reality of Sylvester Stallone as a broke, struggling actor at the end of his rope, casting one last throw of the dice in the hope of making it and earning enough money to support his growing family and keep a roof over their head while being chased for money by his landlady, doesn't fit with the image of toxic male success that Gerwig wishes to portray. Gerwig, a woman who never once in her life has had to worry about money, who has been favoured and given big projects in Hollywood because she is a woman, attempts to slander the reputation of a man who built himself up from poverty and was literally offered money by the Hollywood establishment to go away.
They kept offering you increasingly large sums of money to go away, didn't they?
Right, it went up to about $265,000.
Not to appear in the film.
Right, to stay away, to get off my lawn, boy.
She asserts that his success has nothing to do with his determination, hard work, self-belief, dogged persistence, and talent. No, he got it all because he's a man. Gerwig would have done well to learn some lessons from Stallone's filmmaking. The movie he's talking about in the interview, Rocky, is, as he explains, a love story.
It's a very, very feasible plot. It's just the most amazing thing that had happened to me is a little miraculous. That's the only strange thing about it. And it's a love story,
yeah,
more than a fight film.
Rocky is inspired by a woman. Just as there was a woman behind Sylvester Stallone in real life, his wife, supporting him while he was working on Rocky, there is a woman inspiring Rocky at the beating heart of the story. This is one of the many reasons it is such a powerful movie. Barbie is an empty movie, a glossy, hollow shell, and one of the many reasons for this is that Gerwig sets up men and women in her movie as fundamentally opposed, competing groups, rather than the reality, which is that men and women are complementary to and necessary for one another. At the end of her movie, Ken pleads his case to Barbie. He is a man, and a man needs a woman.
I just don't know who I am without you.
You're 10.
But it's Barbie and Ken. There is no just Ken.
And rather than tell him that she's not interested and to just go and find a different Barbie, she tells him to seek fulfillment within himself. Throughout the entire runtime of Barbie, there's not a single romantic moment between a man and a woman, despite there being dozens of potential couples. This pulls the viewer into the emotionally uncanny valley and adds to the gut feeling that Barbie Land is a dystopian hellscape.
Men rule the world!
Men rule the world. Most men, that is almost 100% of men, don't rule anything. Many of them are not even in control of their own lives. The vast majority of men under the age of 35 don't even own where they live. They are rent serfs living in somebody else's property. Only a tiny percentage of men, way less than 1%, hold positions of authority in government and powerful companies. And while it is true that most people at the top of the political and corporate infrastructure are men, it is also true that the vast majority of the people at the bottom of society are men. 3/4 of alcoholics are men, 2/3 of drug addicts are men, as much as 84% of vagrants are men, 91% of prisoners are men, almost 80% of murder victims are men. If you can point to the top of society and say, look, most of those people are men, therefore society favors men, can you not also, by that same logic, point to the bottom of society and say, look, most of those people are men, therefore society oppresses men? In the Mattel boardroom, Barbie asks where all the women are.
Are any women in charge?
This is a shameless lie, and the director knows it. I could throw a load of statistics into this video, demonstrating how corporations go out of their way to hire women, starting with the fact that the Mattel executive team is 43% female, but I won't, because to do so would be to play their game by their rules, and the despot refuses to do that. If a feminist brings up the fact that only X percent of women are CEOs, or that elite female athletes only earn X percent of what men earn, I do not respond by citing counterfacts and statistics. My answer to these laments on behalf of wealthy elite women is simple. I don't give a fuck. I don't care what the demographic breakdown of the wealthiest 1% of the wealthiest 1% is. What, female tennis players only earn $1 million for every $3 million that male tennis players earn? My God, Ben, cue the violin. Hey, 14 million Brits not earning enough to cover basic living expenses? Did you know that Maria Sakkari only earned $2.5 million last year? What's wrong? Why aren't you sad? Oh, what? Too busy worrying about how you're going to pay next month's rent to care about sexism? Fucking low-life scum. All right, hey, 38 million Americans living in poverty? Did you know that only 10% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women? Aren't you outraged? Feminism does not concern itself with the plight of the poor. It is an elitist ideology that seeks to accrue as much power and wealth for women at the top of the socioeconomic structure as possible. This is why the movie laments the lack of women among Mattel's 40 executives, but does not see fit to express any concern for the lot of women among the other 32,100 employees of the company. They're just corporate serfs. They don't matter.
Get in the box!
The all-male corporate board hear that a woman stepped out of her bounds. She is attempting to defy the role that the patriarchy expects of her. So the patriarchy tell her to...
Get in the box!
So this movie simultaneously preaches that...
Women can be anything.
But also that if a woman dares step outside the predetermined role that the patriarchy have prepared for her, she will be targeted by the patriarchy and forced back into that role. We are next introduced to Teenage Communist, an angry, resentful, bile-filled teenage girl who hates Barbie, hates capitalism, hates consumerism, and hates men, who she will later help to subjugate in Barbie Land.
You've been making women feel bad about themselves since you were invented.
This idea comes from the body positive movement. If the female body is presented in a form that is considered traditionally beautiful, that is wrong, an unrealistic standard of beauty. If a woman who is clearly not beautiful is presented to the public in the exact same context, that is empowering, and it shows that beauty is totally subjective and every woman can be beautiful.
I feel so beautiful.
So presenting a hot model in an advertisement is bad because she's too hot and she's making girls who aren't hot feel bad about themselves, and those same girls are just as hot as the model in the advertisement. This woman is just as beautiful as this model. Feminists admit that beauty is largely objective in their criticism of actually hot women, while simultaneously asserting that beauty is subjective in their glorification of female obesity.
You represent everything wrong with our culture.
Is this a meta joke about how the Barbie movie represents everything wrong with Hollywood culture?
Sexualized capitalism?
Would the makers of Barbie direct this same criticism toward what feminists insist on calling sex workers? That is, women who sell sexual services to men in an entirely unregulated, untaxed, free and open market. I think it would seem fair to characterize such workers as practitioners of sexual capitalism. What do you think, feminism?
No comment!
And can we criticize the highly sexualized presentation of Ryan Gosling, the shirtless hunk who will get female asses in theater seats, as sexualized capitalism? Feminism? Thoughts?
No comment!
You said the feminist movement back 50 years.
This is another mask-off moment. If a doll that presents a healthy and beautiful female form as desirable is anti-feminist, then it necessarily follows that the goal of feminism is to defeminize women, to make them as ugly as possible. And it is. The very feminist body positive movement is an open attempt to reduce feminine beauty to a self-defined elective accessory and to encourage obese women to ignore their weight and deny their health problems. And this is not a trivial matter. The most deadly form of cancer, lung cancer, kills around 127,000 Americans every year. Obesity kills 300,000 Americans per year. Encouraging a woman to ignore her weight, to forget the fact that she is 150 pounds overweight, and just feel good about yourself, girl, is akin to telling someone who has just been diagnosed with cancer to not worry about it. Feminism doesn't seem to care that millions of women die from obesity every year globally. Their only concern is that women feel good about themselves prior to their premature death.
You destroy girls' innate sense of worth.
So women are a master race of Uberfrauen who can achieve anything they want to merely by deciding to do so.
Women can achieve everything and anything they set their mind to.
But also, they're so pathetically weak-minded that their innate sense of worth can be completely obliterated by the presence of a doll.
You are killing the planet with your glorification of rampant consumerism.
You're such a fucking hoe.
How dare you?
I love it.
Oh, I am powerful. Fascist?
Power is inflicting pain and humiliation.
I'm supposed to make you happy and powerful.
Power is tearing human minds apart and putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing.
Oh, I am powerful.
Power is not a means.
Fascist?
A teenage girl openly bragging about how powerful she is while criticizing the presumably powerless woman across from her as a fascist. Do I need to explain the hypocrisy here? At the library, Ken takes out Why Men Rule, Men and Wars, and The Rights of the Patriarchy. These are not the kind of books you would be likely to find in a California public school library. You will, however, find Genderqueer, This Book Is Gay, and a book whose title I cannot even mention on YouTube, but which the Californian government deems appropriate for children.
You respect me.
You see, this is what happens when you allow men any political power. Random dudes end up getting respect. And that's not what we want when a woman, dressed in her underwear, walks into a gym, starts talking to herself, then turns around at some guy who glanced in her general direction and spits out.
Do you need something? Do you need something? Do you need something?
His only response should be to bow his head in shame and, without even making eye contact, apologize to the strong, empowered woman for interrupting her live stream underwear workout. It's because men have power that they insist on being afforded basic human decency. They have gotten uppity and expect better than to be treated like bothersome vermin, as they should be. Patriarchy starts out with the expectation of being treated like a human being and ends with female enslavement.
I'll take a high-level, high-paying job with influence, please.
When a man asks for these things, that's bad. Men seeking power is evil and patriarchal. But when a woman seeks power and influence,
money, house, car, career.
Oh, I am powerful.
That's good. And when a man wants a high-paying job,
I'll take a high-level, high-paying job.
That's bad. But when a woman wants it,
her own career.
That's good. Every corporation in the USA and the rest of the West fall over themselves in the rush to push women into positions of leadership so they can virtue signal their diversity credentials to the world and increase their ESG score. Why do you think Kathleen Kennedy still has a job? Look at Lucasfilm's projects over the past 2 years. Boba Fett was a laughable cringe fest of a failure. Obi-Wan Kenobi was absolute junk and a flop. Andor flopped. Willow was so disastrously bad and so unwatched that Disney scrubbed it from Disney Plus because it was worth more to them as a tax write-off. The Star Cringer Hotel lost more than $1 billion before Disney finally gave up on it and decided to shut it down. Mandalorian Season 3 bombed on Disney Plus, and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny bombed at the box office, losing Disney hundreds of millions of dollars. Yet, for some reason, Kathleen Kennedy is still head of Lucasfilm. I wonder why. Jennifer Salke is the head of Amazon Studios, which produced Rings of Power, a historic disaster which lost 2/3 of its debut audience over the course of the first season of a planned 5. Meanwhile, the men Salke fired from Amazon Prime went over to HBO and made House of Dragon. And yet, Jennifer Salke is still head of Amazon Studio. I wonder why. Velma is one of the most despised and badly reviewed shows in history, but executive producer Mindy Kaling still gets a medal from the president, and Warner Bros., the same company that made Barbie, greenlit a second season of Velma. If these women had funded their garbage projects from their own independent studios, those studios would have gone bankrupt years ago. The only reason they can still work is because they are supported by the corporate machine. They are protected from the consequences consequences of the free market by mega corporations that eat the losses incurred by the feminist shite that they manufacture, because publicly firing high-profile women is bad PR. How do you think Elizabeth Holmes was able to run a completely fraudulent company for 13 years without selling a single unit of product?
I believe the individual is the answer to the challenges of healthcare.
Might have had something to do with the fact that she was the darling of the corporate media industrial complex.
A healthcare pioneer is being compared to visionaries like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. This morning, Elizabeth Holmes is part of the new Time 100 list just out. Her mission is to allow blood testing in every drugstore at a fraction of Medicare costs. Her innovation has fueled anticipation in the healthcare industry and made Holmes the world's youngest female self-made billionaire.
And that any man who dared question her ridiculous claims about her company's technology would immediately have been labeled a sexist and exiled from polite society?
Can I talk to a doctor?
You are talking to a doctor.
Men are so sexist that even when they are raised in a matriarchy where only women are doctors, they assume that only men can be doctors.
Then I can't hire you.
This lifeguard is the only man in the entire movie who isn't a complete moron.
I need to find somewhere where I can start patriarchy fresh.
No, you don't. You just need to move to any one of the many countries where patriarchy is practiced and which feminists never talk about.
The protesters started after the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini while in the custody of the morality police. Why was she arrested? For not wearing her hijab properly.
Men look at me like I'm an object.
Sexual objectification of men.
I'd like to see what kind of nude blob he's packing under those jeans.
Good. Sexual objectification of women.
Men look at me like I'm an object.
Bad.
A trip car I'd like to have, actually.
A man's desire to own anything, especially a vehicle, is toxic masculinity. No can, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. But if a woman wants to own valuable property,
house, car,
that's great.
But reality-challenged woman.
Yes, a woman who thinks she's Barbie is a reality-challenged person, but is the same true of a woman who thinks she's a man? Or a man who thinks he's a I mean, trans women are women. Trans Barbie is brave and stunning. There's not even any such thing as women. Anyone can be a woman. Men can't become women.
Your CFO.
Me.
Your COO.
Here.
President of...
No one gives a fuck.
I'm a man with no power. Does that make me a woman?
No, there are no circumstances under which a man can become a... Gerbig tries to preempt the response she anticipates to her criticism of an insufficient number of elite corporate women by strawmanning it.
We had a woman CEO in the 90s.
As previously explained, the correct response to a feminist moaning about the lack of millionaire women in the room is, I don't care. Barbie being placed in the box is accompanied by the sound of prison cells closing shut. Subtle messaging, Greta. Very subtle. Not at all like the megaphone method of political messaging employed thus far.
Come off it, everybody hates women. Women hate women and men hate women. It's the one thing we can all agree on.
This is another one of teenage communists' broad, sweeping, and insanely dumb statements that doesn't even merit a response, but I will say I'm genuinely not sure if the movie wants us to hate this character or root for her. She's utterly insufferable, she's a bratty teenager, she's prickly and mean to her mother, and an endless torrent of mind-bogglingly vapid shit pours from her mouth every time she opens it, but she seems to be presented as a kind of awoken femme warrior, and she takes part in the final restoration of the matriarchy in Barbieland, so I have to assume that Gerwig thinks that the audience will root for this unendurably obnoxious brat.
Women hold all major positions of power. Control all the money. Basically everything that men do in your world, women do in ours.
According to Forbes, women control 70 to 80% of all purchasing decisions. Notice also that she says that everything men do in the real world, women do in Barbieland. In the real world, men controlling everything is bad. In Barbieland, women controlling everything is good. So we're back at Barbieland and we get a brief scene of men enjoying themselves playing volleyball, which we will soon learn is a manifestation of toxic masculine patriarchy. Also, Mr. Taiwan Does Not Exist makes an appearance.
Hello,
One more reason to dislike this movie. By the way, Taiwan does exist. Here is a picture of me, hammered out of my mind, in Taipei, with a giant teddy bear and a group of Taiwanese people. To this day, I have no idea how I got that teddy bear. It is during this scene that we hear the Sam Smith song, which is supposed to represent masculinity. There was a time when songs intended to represent masculinity sounded like this. Were written by men who looked like this and who sounded like this.
This is the Hall of Fame. That's the platinum, that's the gold. 1 million copies at that point. It went far beyond that, of course.
Now, songs intended to represent masculinity sound like this.
You think that women rule the world?
Are written by individuals who look like that and who sound like this.
I felt very restricted by the male gender being assigned to me as a kid. It's caused horrible things to me.
Tell me about it.
It's been awful. It's been pretty traumatizing and awful. And
what are the Kens day?
I don't know.
Men are so irrelevant in Barbie land that it has never even occurred to Barbie that they need a place to live. Still though, the patriarchy must be destroyed, the matriarchy restored, and the men returned to homeless penury.
Everything exists to expand and elevate the presence of men.
Where do you even begin with an assertion this broad, vague, and stupid? There are no male-only spaces left in the West. In 2019, the Boy Scouts was abolished and replaced with Scouts BSA, which was open to girls. The organization filed for bankruptcy in early 2020, less than a year after ceasing to be the Boy Scouts. The Girl Scouts still exists and has no plans to admit boys. College-educated women in the labor force now outnumber men. Women make up 60% of college students. Last year, the EU voted to impose gender quotas on large companies that will demand that 40% of board seats in large companies go to women. In the US, boys are 20% more likely to drop out of high school, men make up 93% of the prison population, and as much as 84% of the homeless population, and 80% of self-deletions. Apologies for the dumb euphemism, YouTube will come for me if I say soon. Here's a fact that may surprise you. As of 2023, single women made up 17% of all homebuyers. Single men, by contrast, account for just 9%. The following is from Wikipedia and concerns corporate practice in the USA regarding gender quotas. Karen iPhone?
BlackRock's 2020 proxy paper states that companies should have at least 2 women directors on their board. In the event that BlackRock determines a company is not sufficiently committed to board diversity, BlackRock may recommend voting against the nominating or governance committee. Glass Lewis US benchmarks were first released in 2017. The most recent proxy paper mandates that boards have at least one female director and will generally recommend voting against the nominating committee chair of a board that has no female members. ISS added board diversity guidelines in 2018, stipulating that US boards should have at least one female director. In the guidelines released for 2020, ISS recommended to vote against or withhold from the chair of the nominating committee at companies where there are no women on the company's board. This advice was relevant to companies on either the Russell 3000 or the S&P 1500 indices.
This should go without saying, but there are presently 0 gender quotas intended to benefit men. To say the USA is a nation in which everything exists to expand and elevate the presence of men is quantifiably wrong. And again, we see here an instance of doublethink. Women can be
everything and anything they set their mind to.
But also, the world is built solely for the benefit of men, and women don't stand a chance of succeeding because patriarchy. Boxing is toxic masculinity again. Exercise is toxic, bandanas are toxic, terms of endearment,
a tiny baby,
are toxic, man toys are toxic, Hummers and cowboy hats are toxic, and beer is toxic, except, of course,
Bud Light. So good.
Honestly, the destruction of the matriarchy that treated the Kens as less than contemptible is the only part of this movie I enjoy. The presentation of masculinity is dumb and superficial, essentially men surrounded by random, mostly useless shit and behaving like stereotypical frat boys, but seeing the Kens who previously existed in a state of tolerated irrelevancy rising up against their oppressors to claim a stake in the society that treated them as non-citizens is beautiful to watch. If that had been the whole plot of the movie, that would have been fucking awesome. Women being good to their men, bringing them beer and food, and helping them to relax. Oh, the horror.
I like not having to make any decisions.
No, even in a domestic role, women have important decisions to make. Like what brand of beer she's gonna bring me from the fridge. Am I right, boys? Seriously though, the women do seem quite happy in the roles they have fallen into in Ken's patriarchal paradise. Why does feminism want to ruin their fun, rob them of their happiness, and return the Kens to the misery of irrelevant side piecery?
What are you doing? You're a doctor!
According to feminism, it is beneath the dignity of high-earning, high-powered, high-status women to please their men. If a woman is a doctor, that is all she can be. She cannot be a loving girlfriend, she sure as hell can't be a loving mother. Feminism has assigned her a role and she will stick to it. When men want to put women in a box,
get in the box!
That's bad. When feminism wants to put women in a box,
what are you doing? You're a doctor!
That's good.
This is like in the 1500s with the indigenous people in smallpox. They had no defenses against it.
Before I address this point, I would like to ask what exactly is meant by indigenous. Am I not an indigenous Irishman, given that I am native to my island? And all of my ancestors, as far back as can be traced, are also native to the island? Why then would I not be considered indigenous but Native Americans, many of whom, such as the Comanches, lived on land that was conquered from other tribes, are considered indigenous? Anyway, Boss Mom is suggesting here that matriarchal domination is the natural state of humanity, and that any system which places women in subservient positions is invasive and unnatural, such as every single system of human political organization that ever existed anywhere in the world until very recently, when more egalitarian societies began to emerge in the West. It is ironic that the lot of indigenous people should be used as an analog to criticize the invasive, destructive presence of patriarchy. Given the role that women had in indigenous societies. Here's just one example, an account of the Ainu of Hokkaido, a people native to that island, written by John Batchelor, an English missionary who studied the Ainu in Hokkaido in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Karen iPhone, if you would.
Batchelor also describes the daily life of Ainu women, appalled at the amount of hard physical labor and household chores they must do, and claimed that the women were slaves to the men. Batchelor's opinion on Ainu women changed slightly by his later book, The Ainu and Their Folklore, in which he claimed to know 2,000 or 3,000 Ainu women well, and that despite the tattoos some were good-looking, and that all Ainu women are at times happy. However, he continued saying that Ainu women were treated like slaves.
But Boss Mom is talking specifically about Native Americans, so I think it's only fair we look into their treatment of women. Here is an excerpt from the book Comanches, The Destruction of a People by T.R. Fehrenbach.
The protracted rape, humiliation, and murder of female captives began on the homeward journey, leaving a bloody trail behind the war party. This began when the warriors believed they had put enough distance behind them for security, and they could make a camp and light fires. There was no taboo against tormenting women, but this rarely went beyond sexual assault, though Amerindians were known to impale women on rough-cut stakes, or cut their heel tendons and leave them in the wilderness.
I mention this not just to highlight the irony of Boss Mom's statement, but also to point out just how historically myopic feminism is. Women living in the United States today have the best quality of life and highest degree of freedom and opportunity of women in any society in history by far. If we did talk about how women were treated in the past, especially by different cultures, it would make the USA's modern treatment of women look really good by comparison, and feminism knows this, which is why its followers never talk about how women are treated in other parts of the world. Screeching harpies demanding that grid girls be banned from Formula One.
Then actually you're not letting women make their
couldn't
own choices.
I could not agree more.
That's not what feminism actually is. Feminism is not about that. Feminism is about equality. It's about treating men and women the same. This is clearly a situation in which women are treated differently to men. Some jobs become obsolete in the name of progress. That is just a fact.
And
in
also,
the name of progress, I mean, with
hot girls be banned from Subway ads and criticising directors because there's not enough female-only screen time in his movie.
This is a, you know, person with a great deal of acting talent, and yet you haven't really given her many lines in the movie. And I wondered, I guess that was a deliberate choice on your part, and I just wanted to know why that was, that we don't hear her actually speaking very much. And Margot, I wanted you to also comment about being in the film in this part.
Well, I just reject your hypotheses.
are very quickly exposed as clout-hungry charlatans when you ask them why they aren't talking about FGM in Somalia.
You failed me!
Just to contextualize this scene before we move on, the director of this movie intends this as the villain's monologue. Ken's speech is supposed to elicit the same emotional response and cognitive effect as this.
First, there was a dream. Now, there is reality. Here, in the untainted cradle of the heavens, will be created a new super race, a race of perfect physical specimens.
So keep that in mind throughout the rest of Ken's monologue.
Out there, I was somebody. When I walked down the street, people respected me just for who I am. I could have ruled that world, but I don't need any of those things here. Here, I'm just a dude. And you know what? That's enough.
Do I need to point out to you that this movie has just completely undermined its own argument? That Ken has fully justified the Chad Glorious Revolution? Before the patriarchal uprising, Kens were so marginalized by the Barbie matriarchy that it didn't even occur to them that they should be treated with basic human dignity. Ken's seizure of power abolished a system of political oppression in which men had no rights at all. He's a hero. Pull-ups are toxic, and exercise is a far-right obsession. Let's see how Barbie responds to Alpha Ken's enfranchisement of the Kens.
You can't do this.
The Barbie matriarchy was a paradise. The Ken patriarchy is a living hell. Why, exactly?
This is Barbie land.
Barbie is arguing here that the people who built this nation have an exclusive claim upon its political management and cultural practices, and that outsiders have no right to stake any sort of claim whatsoever within the boundaries of that nation. This is an ethno-nationalist argument. We built this country. It's ours. No one else is allowed a say in how it's run. Fuck off.
Are we gonna stand on the sidelines, quietly standing there while our country gets raped?
Yes, a feminist movie is invoking ethno-nationalism in defense of matriarchy.
How's that feel? Not fun, is it?
This is actually a great moment in the movie. It's the perfect opportunity for Barbie to realize just how horrendously unjust the Barbie matriarchy was and make amends. Perhaps enter political negotiations with the Kens in a spirit of compromise and equality. This does not happen. Barbie, against the very obvious evidence to the contrary, continues to believe wholeheartedly that
Barbie Land was perfect before.
Instead of acknowledging the legitimacy of the Ken's claim to citizen rights, the movie chooses to have Barbie lead a reactionary power grab to return the Kens to a state of non-citizenry.
This is my mojo dojo casa house. It's not Barbie's mojo dojo casa house.
When a man is rejected and told to get lost, he can suck it up and, I don't know, go sleep on the beach or something. When a woman is rejected and told to get lost, she has every right to feel hard done by and enter a state of vengeful outrage. Have a look at this shot. Barbie is so horrified by the much more egalitarian society of Ken's patriarchy that she is no longer willing to physically participate in it. Now look behind her. Everyone's partying, having a good time. The Kens are happy. The Barbies are happy. Yet she maintains that this is all wrong. She will not be satisfied until she has reclaimed total political control for her faction.
We have to go back. Barbie Land needs saving.
Teenage communist previously described Barbie as a
fascist.
Now, appalled by the newly acquired citizen status of half of Barbie Land's population, she wants to return there to help instigate a counter-revolution that will strip the new citizens of all of their rights and deprive them of their newly won property. Right.
You're brainwashed.
Women wanting to treat their men well and act in a feminine and loving manner is the result of brainwashing, but women throwing away their youth and rejecting marriage and children so they can go to work in a literal box on the 22nd floor of some disgusting building for 20 years until the company has a bad quarterly and tosses her out on her ass? Perfectly sane.
Either you're brainwashed or you're weird and ugly.
If you love your man and he loves you, that's bad, but if you hate all men and men hate you, that's preferable. What? Movie, do you even hear yourself?
It is literally impossible to be a woman.
Oh, for fuck's sake, here it comes. The women have it so hard monologue. The screed. This is going to take a while, isn't it?
We have to always be extraordinary, but we're always doing it wrong.
Okay, who in the history of humanity ever made the assertion that women have to always be extraordinary? No one expects this of anyone. Even people with the highest levels of responsibility in the world, such as major CEOs and political leaders, are not expected to always be extraordinary because we are aware that they are human, and the idea that women are always criticized as getting it wrong is just plain bullshit. If you consistently perform well, you will generally get credit for it, especially if you're a woman. Look at Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She got a lot of credit for writing and directing Fleabag. As a result of that show's acclaim and popularity, she was rushed to the highest echelons of Hollywood. She was brought in to co-write No Time to Die, the last Bond movie, you know, the one where they killed James Bond. She was brought into Lucasfilm to help destroy the Indiana Jones franchise, and she is currently involved in an attempt to destroy the Tomb Raider franchise at Amazon under the approving gaze of Jennifer Salke. She got all that from one show. If Fleabag had been written and directed by a man, he would have gotten some credit for it and would likely have been able to move one rung up the ladder and maybe make a mid-budget movie. But because it was a woman who had that success, she was airlifted to the very top of the ladder in an establishment-furnished luxury helicopter. Even if a woman does do it wrong, she will very often still get credit. Just ask this pathetic quitter who walked out on her team and whose name I refuse to include in this video.
You have to be thin, but not too thin.
That's just basic good advice. Stay trim and healthy. And with regard to beauty standards, men often prefer curvy women to very thin women. Jessica Alba and Scarlett Johansson are both good examples of this.
And you can never say you want to be thin.
Of course you can say you want to be thin. Looking good is a desirable trait. No one denies that. Beauty is a form of social currency. That is a widely accepted fact of female existence, and no sane person would criticize a woman for wanting to look good.
You have to have money, but you can't ask for money.
Of course you fucking can. Teachers in the UK, the vast majority of whom are women, recently went on strike to demand a pay increase at 5% above inflation. Hollywood writers and actors are also on strike, and the main explicitly stated reason is money. They want more of it.
You have to be a boss, but you can't be mean.
Why would you want to be mean? I have worked for mean bosses. It is miserable. I have seen women who worked with me under mean female bosses reduced to tears from the stress of that situation. What kind of psychopath would complain that she can't be mean to the employees she happens to be managing? I can't inflict psychological trauma and financial blackmail on some poor working stiff. How horrible. Poor me.
You have to lead, but you can't squash other people's ideas.
Only a tiny fraction of men or women will ever be in a position to lead a group of people in a professional context. And discarding bad ideas is a daily task of any leader. It's an expected thing, and anyone who takes their idea being cast aside as a personal affront is a moron. It's just business, not personal. If you really believe in your idea that much, take out a loan and put your own ass on the line.
You have to be a career woman, but...
Okay, I cannot listen to another word of this bollocks right now. I'm going for a run. Right, where were we?
You have to be a career woman, but also always be looking out for other people.
The only people telling women they have to be careerists are feminists. Not men.
But also always be looking out for other people.
This is such a nebulous assertion as to be almost entirely meaningless, but my guess as to what Gerwig means when she inserts this line into the script is that women are tasked with always being responsible for those around them, which is not true. No one expects that of anyone. We are all well aware that life is hard enough just taking care of yourself and your family, and in any case, the kind of person who is always looking out for other people is not well thought of. There's a name for those types. They're called busybodies.
6079 Smith W. Yes, you. Bend lower.
No thanks. The vast majority of people are quite happy to just get on with their life while everyone else minds their own damn business.
You have to answer for men's bad behavior.
There are, at present, well over 1 million men in prison in the United States. It's insane that I even have to point this out, but given just how batshit on a clown stick absurd this screed is, here we go. No woman, none, had to answer for the crimes or behaviors of any of the men currently in prison. Those men had to answer for their own behavior. They answered for it, and now they're in jail. For now at least, human beings in the USA are not collectivized by demographic, despite extensive efforts that have been made to that end by those who are determined to impose an intersectional caste system on the country. Individuals are treated as individuals, not representatives of an externally defined identity group. As such, when an individual does wrong, that individual is held accountable and no one else.
You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women.
Women are sometimes called out for being too pretty, and the plaintiffs in these cases are always, without exception, body positive activists. The terminology they use is something along the lines of presenting an unrealistic standard of beauty to women, and beauty is totally subjective, and a 250-pound wilde blob is just as desirable as a woman that is actually identifiable as such. She also asserts here that women have to look pretty for men. This gives me an opportunity to discuss an obscure but very interesting piece of history from the Wikipedia page on Eva Braun, Hitler's girlfriend.
She led a sheltered and privileged existence and seemed uninterested in politics. One instance when she took an interest was in 1943, shortly after Germany had fully transitioned to a total war economy. Among other things, this meant a potential ban on women's cosmetics and luxuries. According to Speer's memoirs, Braun approached Hitler in high indignation. Hitler quietly instructed Speer, who was armaments minister at the time, to halt production of women's cosmetics and luxuries rather than instituting an outright ban.
The Third Reich conquered Europe and fought their way to the gates of Moscow and Stalingrad, but were unable to prevent women from using cosmetics. Women like to look good and choose to do so entirely of their own volition and without any pressure from men to do so.
But never forget that the system is rigged.
I'll keep my response to this simple. It's just another one of this movie's 528,000 lies. See previously mentioned statistics about how well women are presently doing in the USA. The system is a deliberately vague term, but in academia, Hollywood, and the corporate world, women are heavily favoured. If anything, the academic, media, entertainment, and corporate systems are rigged in favour of women.
You have to never get old.
What? Who said you have to never get old? That's physically impossible. To quote Haruki Murakami, only the dead stay 17 forever. I hope women get old. I hope everybody gets old and dies happy with children and grandchildren.
You have to never be rude.
What is wrong with this woman? Again, with the desire to inflict misery upon others? No one should be rude, men or women. Telling someone not to be rude is simply making clear to them that they live in a civilized society in which basic regard for other people is a strongly held value and they should act accordingly. Just as there is a word for insufferable hall monitors always looking out for other people, there is also a word for people who don't have regard for others and act rudely toward them. They're called assholes.
Never show off.
I'm going to let my man Bruce Lee handle this one. Showing off is a fool's idea of glory. The rest of the screed is just a rapid-fire word salad of lazy, brain-dead assertions that do not even merit a response. I could respond to them, but I honestly couldn't be bollocksed, and if I have to listen to one more word of this absolute, irredeemably stupid, ear-hemorrhoid-inducing fucking dross, my will to live will drop dangerously close to zero. This unhinged, rambling, atrocious, vapious rant is easily the worst part of this big pink glop of shite that calls itself a movie. So when Boss Mom finishes her screed, Hot Brown Barbie says the following.
I did write a book.
The implication here is that by accepting the feminine role within a relationship and a traditional role within society, a woman gives up her ability to self-realize through high social status professional activity. This is just another variant of building a family bad, but entering a corporate pod and turning herself into a battery that generates power for the machine, good.
What you said broke me out of it.
This is another of the movie's mask-off admissions. The only way to get women to stop behaving like women and imitate the success of men is to brainwash them. The movie admits this while simultaneously asserting that women in traditional homekeeping roles submit to their station in life only after extensive brainwashing from the patriarchy. In other words, brainwashing women in order to get them to behave as you want them to behave is bad, but brainwashing women in order to get them to behave as you want them to behave is good.
By giving voice to the cognitive dissonance required to be a woman under the patriarchy, you robbed it of its power.
No, by spewing a cognitively dissonant, lazy, badly written, unhinged, nonsensical pack of lies, you have demonstrated the necessity of patriarchy. Well done.
Yes, white savior Barbie!
Teenage communist was upset at Barbie for altering women's perception of themselves through external coercion.
You destroy girls' innate sense of worth.
Now, teenage communist is congratulating Barbie for altering women's perception of themselves through external coercion. The matriarchal reactionaries then concoct a plan to pull all the Barbies into the back of a van, put them through a brainwashing session, and release them back among the Kens as political assets, which constitutes female empowerment, according to this movie.
And when their guard is down, you take the power back.
The power.
Power is not a means, it is an end.
There is only power.
Absolute power. Take the power back.
Another admission that feminism is not interested in women's happiness or life satisfaction, it is interested only in the accruement of power. This ideology does not see men and women as complementary halves of the human species whose happiness is mutually dependent. It sees them as fundamentally opposed identity groups competing in a zero-sum game. A win for men is necessarily a loss for women. It is impossible for both identity groups to elevate their condition in life simultaneously. This is sexual Marxism. Marxism holds that wealth simply exists, and the accumulation of wealth by the powerful can only come at the expense of the weak. Feminism holds that power simply exists, that men hold all of it, and that women can only become empowered at men's expense. This is why Barbie refuses to come to an accommodation with the Kens. The notion that everyone can hold a limited amount of socio-political influence makes no sense to her. She believes only in total power and the struggle of the group to attain that power in a brutal zero-sum game. Oh my god, mansplaining.
When incompetent men explain my own area of expertise to me.
Suddenly, I don't feel so bad for those women captured by the Comanches, flayed and left to die in agony in the wilderness. At least they didn't have to experience the horror of a man trying to help them use a software program, or even worse, listen to a film geek spurg out over The Godfather.
You have to find a way to reject men's advances without damaging their egos.
What, like this?
You truly make me the happiest person on earth.
I don't want to touch a foot.
Sorry, love. Beggars can't be choosers.
And then there's pretending to be terrible at every sport ever.
The Wrexham Red Dragons recently beat the US women's soccer team 12-0 in a 45-minute match, during which the men were barely exerting themselves. That is all.
Turn the Kens against each other.
After brainwashing the entire female population to use them as assets through which to seize total power, the matriarchal anti-revolutionaries are now declaring their intention to instigate a civil war among the Kens. The alternative was to just leave everyone alone and let them be happy. And these women are, according to this movie, the good guys.
He wants to control the government.
Boss Mom is criticizing Ken for wanting to control the government while she is actively involved in a political conspiracy to seize total control of the government. We have been over how Ken's villain monologue is actually a heroic justification and a call to justice. Here's the movie's real villain monologue.
Give them their dream come true. And at the peak of their happiness, when they think you actually care, you take it all away.
At the peak of their happiness, you take it all away. It isn't even enough for women to be all powerful, men must be miserable. So the Barbies all walk away from their men to make the men jealous of and angry at each other. I have to give credit where credit is due here. This is genuinely funny. The joke is that the fat Barbie doesn't realize that she's the grenade and actually thinks the guy who has sacrificed himself so his bros can get laid will be upset. Greta, hate the movie, but that joke did make me laugh.
All those in favor of letting Barbie Land be Barbie Land.
I wonder, would the same right of cultural sovereignty be extended to European nations? Can England just be England and not import 1 million men? So the jumpsuit-uniformed pink guards have achieved their anti-revolutionary goals, recaptured total power, and returned the Kens to a state of servitude.
The Barbieland constitution to what it should be.
The Kens are once again homeless and no longer have any right to political participation or property. But diverse President Barbie does toss them a small bone.
Maybe a lower circuit court judgeship.
We accept.
The purpose of this appointment being to set up the following assertion.
One day, Kens will have as much power and influence in Barbieland as women have in the real world.
Implying, of course, that women have next to no real power in the real world, and once again exposing the feminist belief that power is the only real thing that matters.
There is only power.
What about Barbie? What's her ending?
She's in love with Ken.
I'm not in love with Ken.
Of course she isn't, because Greta Gerwig is a deconstructionist director who
subverts the audience's expectations
by deconstructing old, outdated tropes in order to update the movie for a modern audience. How clever and original, and not exactly like every single other modern Hollywood director. So Barbie can't have the happily ever after with a man ending because patriarchy, but she can have
a vagina.
The old lady shows up again and has a conversation with Barbie that bored me so completely that I'm not going to cover it in this video. Sorry, not sorry. Teenage communist gets offended because her father said,
"Si se puede,"
which translates to "yes, she can," and was used by Latino farm workers in the US in the 60s during a civil rights campaign. Teenage communist responds thusly to her father's linguistic endeavors.
That's appropriation, Dad.
No, it isn't, you unendurable Marxist gobshite. It's a man trying to improve his mind by learning a language, suggesting that uttering words is the exclusive right of native speakers of the language that produced those words is a profoundly stupid argument. What teenage communist is doing here is called cultural gatekeeping, which is an extreme version of cultural ethno-nationalism. These words belong to us by right of blood. Any person who utters them that is not of our blood is trespassing upon our exclusive cultural space. Cultural gatekeeping is ethno-nationalism by another name. I don't speak Spanish, but in the spirit of cultural enrichment, real cultural enrichment, not the kind that results in cities being burned to the ground, I learned a phrase of Spanish, which I now direct at the Barbie movie. Vete a la mierda. I am sure that my Spanish-speaking viewers will forgive my crude pronunciation. The scene between Barbie and the old lady at the end of the movie is an attempt to give Barbie an emotional, heart-wrenching send-off.
I always had this dream that at the end you'd be like, why am I crying?
And it falls totally flat. This is a textbook example of a failed payoff. The movie really wants the audience to feel the emotion of the moment. Look at the nostalgic analog era photos, listen to the hauntingly beautiful piano tones of the bittersweet ballad, close up on Margot Robbie crying, feel the pathos. Gerwig tries to force an emotional reaction from the audience by packing as much tear-jerky shit into the scene as she can possibly fit. And none of it works. The only thing I felt in this scene was boredom. This payoff feels for several reasons. Most obviously because no one cares about the old lady. So she invented Barbie, so what? She hasn't been in the movie long enough for anyone to care about her. This scene would have worked if it took place with Ken. If, for example, through some patriarchy magic that he learned from a book about horses, Ken shows Barbie the world from his perspective. She sees through Ken's eyes as he sleeps rough on the beach after Barbie turfs his ass onto the street. She sees him get bullied by the other Kens, ignored everywhere he goes, and looking longingly at Barbie as she parties with the girls. A lonely outsider, she feels reveals his joy at being treated like a human being in the real world and his excitement when he liberates the other Kens. In this moment, she realizes the horror that the matriarchy has imposed on the Kens and feels deep regret. That would have worked because we, the audience, have seen Ken suffering. We have seen the horrors of the matriarchy, but Gerwig wants us to feel that same level of emotion in an exchange between Barbie and some random ass old lady because the old lady has told us how important she is. It doesn't work. The emotional payoff can only come when you have shown the audience why they should care. You can't demand that they care while beating them over the head with a baseball bat made out of Billie Eilish ballads and Polaroid photos. You must make them care. And no one cares about old lady. And so the scene fails. Gerwig thinks of this scene as the concluding action of Barbie's character arc, but she didn't have a character arc. She started out as a benefactor of a totalitarian political system. She friend-zones Ken and is convinced of the inherent superiority of women. And, at the end of the movie, she has restored the briefly threatened totalitarian system of which she is a benefactor, publicly friend-zones Ken, and is, more than ever, convinced of the inherent superiority of women. She had no arc. This isn't Han Solo appearing at the critical moment to save Luke and complete his arc from scummy smuggler to a hero who enters battle to save his friend. This is a villain who has fought against and successfully suppressed change and is now being rewarded for her loyalty to the regime. In a very real sense, Barbie is a profoundly conservative movie because its hero is a counter-revolutionary who crushes the revolt of an oppressed class of people, restores the old guard Bourbon regime, and is rewarded for it. The main message of this movie is loyalty to established power. In the Barbie version of Star Wars, Barbie kills Luke before he can finish the trench run. The Death Star blows up Yavin 4, killing millions, wiping out the Alliance, and condemning the galaxy to perpetual rule under the Empire. Barbie is then rewarded for her loyalty and ruthless destruction of the rebellion by a grateful Emperor. And the director, Gerwig, wants us to sympathize with Barbie at the end. No movie has ever achieved the levels of hypocrisy and cognitive dissonance that Barbie does. It is nothing short of a masterclass in doublethink. In 1984, when Winston Smith is being tortured in the Ministry of Truth, O'Brien calmly explains the nature of doublethink.
Only the disciplined mind can see reality, Winston. It needs an act of self-destruction, an effort of the will.
Greta Gerwig possesses the disciplined mind. Reality is to her what the party says it is, and she constructs her worldview accordingly. Logic, evidence, and morality does not factor into this worldview. If the party says something is true, then it is true. If a woman looks at a man holding up four fingers and says that he is holding up four fingers, she is right. If a man gives the same answer...
How many fingers am I holding up, Winston?
Four.
You're lying.
If a woman looks at these same four fingers and says that there are in fact five fingers because the party has declared it so, she is right. If a man gives the same answer...
Then how many?
Five.
Barbie isn't the clever social commentary that the director thinks it is. It is a series of piss-weak strawman analogues filled with hypocritical, dumb, and nonsensical assertions and politically motivated lies.
You literally have no idea what you are talking about. The opening act of Barbie is a brilliant commentary on how women are treated in the real world. By relegating Kens to the status of non-entities who exist only to compete for the attention of the Barbies, Gerwig is showing the men viewing the movie what it feels like to exist as a woman in the real-world patriarchy. Chris Stuckman said it best.
It is trying to teach you something. It does have lessons in the movie that I think some people might need to hear.
No non-playable sheep. Gerwig is constructing a trite straw man. In the Western world, women have always had important roles in society. They have always been respected for the hard work they do within those roles and have enjoyed extensive rights and protections. Women are now, and always have been, valued members of society. The Kens in Barbie Land have none of those things. They have no social roles, no property, no rights, no protections, and no acknowledgement of their basic humanity. They are social outcasts in the Barbie matriarchy who are tolerated treated only as fawning pets. This is not a clever commentary by a brilliant director. This is a clumsy, poorly handled attempt at analogy that has all the subtlety and artistic craftsmanship of a cactus dildo and demonstrates about as much socio-political erudition as a cactus dildo. Gerwig is not the brilliant social commentator she makes herself out to be. She's a technically capable director, but has no proficiency in the use of symbolism, metaphor, analogy, and psychology in film. She is aware of these elements. Her Kubrick homage at the start of the movie clearly indicates her intent to incorporate all of these elements into her film. She's just really bad at it. Barbie has been a massive, record-breaking success. The movie made $356 million on its opening weekend on a budget of $145 million. This will be a massively profitable movie that will finish at well over $1 billion at the end of its box office run. If there is one positive to take away from Barbie, it's that audiences are unlikely to ever see a trailer like this.
Oh my god, do you guys remember Straight People?
Yeah, they had a nice run.
No! Or this.
An evil is coming that threatens our kingdom. Our freedom.
Or this.
If there is one thing the internet agrees on, it's that you should never change anything ever. I hope you die.
Or this.
You stole it.
Then you stole it.
And then I stole it. It's called capitalism.
Again. The days of trailers and marketing campaigns spitting in the faces of fans and entire demographics, advertising the product as highly politicized message propaganda, then screaming istophobe when the audience doesn't show up for the product, are almost certainly over. Though I'm sure a few final sparks will be spat out from the dying embers of this particularly odd and unpleasant cultural trend. However, the impending death of toxic marketing will not stop the emergence of a narrative that feminist cinema is in, and audiences are screaming out for more of it. The fact that the marketing campaign for Barbie was the most deceitful in cinema history, promising an apolitical romp of sunny summer fun, will be quietly memory-holed.
They never existed.
I remember. You remember.
I do not remember.
As much as I despise my enemy, I also respect them. Warner Bros. Have achieved a masterstroke with Barbie. They have learned from the mistakes of the past, completely disguised the ferocity of their attack, and by doing so, turned the most disgusting feminist screed ever to libel the silver screen into a commercial smash. A major victory that will reinvigorate the hopes of cinematic destruction that the enemies of culture harbor in their diseased minds and poisoned hearts. 14 years after their resounding victory at the Kalka River, the Mongols returned to the Kievan Rus with 120,000 men. And conquered it. Barbie is not a singular victory, it is the beginning of a campaign.
After a disappointing year of unoriginal, trite, boring, predictable, politicized and depressing Hollywood bilge, I am glad I can finally sit down with my family to a simple, fun, family-friendly movie that we can all enjoy.
Thanks for listening, subscribe, and don't forget to deprive the like button of its basic human rights.